This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/twim.
This week on the show, it's all about ads in podcasts. How do you price them, buy them, and sell them? And a little bit about hot tubbing with monkeys, too. All this on This Week in Media, episode 119. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back again. I'm Daisy Whitney with TVWeek.com and the New Media Minute, and you are listening to TWIM, but you know that. And you probably already know that we had some technical challenges with last week's episode, and I appreciate the emails and the interest that everyone has in the show. It was great to actually hear from people and to realize that they missed it. But the good news is we have reposted last week's episode, so you'll find it in iTunes or wherever you listen to it, so you can listen to that again. We had an interesting conversation last week about a number of topics, but in particular international distribution of web shows. So I think that might be something if you want to go back to that episode and catch that again. But we have, of course, a fresh episode this week. And this is going to be another kind of topic-focused one where we're going to concentrate most of this week's edition on advertising in podcasts, near and dear, I think, to everybody's heart. Many of our listeners have their own podcasts or are thinking of starting them or thinking about advertising. So Susan Bratton is here in the studio with me today. Susan, thank you for joining me.
I'm happy to be back happy to be here.
And Susan is with Personal Life Media, yeah, which produces 25 podcast.
35 days.
Oh my gosh.
And I got five more in the hopper.
You're awesome. That's great to hear.
Yeah, keep going.
So Susan helped me put together pretty much everybody besides Alex. We'll say hello to Alex in a minute. So she helped me get all of the guests for this week's episode. So I really appreciate your input and your planning. So we also have in the studio Annette Fuller. And Annette is with Bautista Direct Marketing. So say hello, Annette.
Hello, everybody.
And thank you for joining us. Annette is a media buyer, and Bautista buys ads across all sorts of mediums, TV, radio,
print,
podcast,
online, podcast, absolutely.
And you're particularly active in that area, that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on, to kind of get the perspective of somebody who is making the buys and making some of the decisions. And Susan also lined up Penny
Ginnewish.
Thank you, Susan.
I was ready to do that for you because I had to practice saying Penny's. Here's what we do. We just call them the Matzo Mess.
So much easier. Hello, Penny the Matzo Man.
Hello.
Now, Penny is Skyping in from Montreal, so we have dual international representation today. So, Penny, thank you so much for joining us. And now, Penny is with Ice.com, which is an online jeweler.
Who doesn't love that?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're thinking about something, since our podcast listeners are mostly men, if you want to get your lady a little jewelry for the holidays. But Penny's also an active podcast advertiser and sponsors some of Susan's shows. So again, thank you for connecting us. And then we also, of course, have Alex from Tokyo.
Hello,
Alex.
How's it going?
Good. Thanks for joining us. What's the latest from Tokyo? Anything interesting since last week that's been happening in your world?
You know, it was actually a slow production week, oddly enough. And so we took off. We left Tokyo and went to Yutakana, which is where it is known for the snow monkeys. So the little dudes that are sitting in the hot tub, little monkeys, you know, monkeys that are smarter than us because they're spending their afternoons sitting in hot tubs. And so we went there and checked that out. It was a lot of fun. So
Alex, you know where you need to go. I have to find out where this is, but there is a restaurant. There was a YouTube video that became popular a couple months ago of monkeys serving sake in a restaurant. I think it's in Tokyo. I'm going to have to track it down. It started to,
I just have to see that.
I cannot. I'm going to Tokyo probably in July with my family, and that is, my 8-year-old is dying to see the monkeys serving sake. So if anybody wants to see this video, I'll track it down. I blogged about it on TV Week a couple months ago, but it's great. I mean, they wear the robes, like the little kimono robes, and they just go around this kind of Japanese sushi place, and they serve the sake, and they work for peanuts, or edamame, or soybeans, or something.
That is a restauranteur who is thinking, you know,
with cheap employment, right? We all need that these days. Now, before we get started, Alex, we have an advertiser, so I'm going to let you tell us about that.
We do. We have Audible.com is our sponsor for today, and he Audible, of course, is the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment, and you can get a free audiobook at audiblepodcast.com/twim, and it's the great thing about having Audible, and one of the things that I've kind of followed Leo's lead on is that we just don't have advertisers that we don't believe in, you know, and that we don't use. And Audible, I'm always excited when we get to have them as a sponsor because I use them all the time. I have a very deep library of Audible stuff. Now, do you guys all use Audible?
My husband downloaded a new book yesterday. I'm sort of speaking collectively right now because I'm still a Luddite. I'm the paper book person. But my husband downloaded the Marcia Brady book yesterday, and from Audible, he's loving it.
Is he going to be mad that you shared that?
Oh, God, no. He doesn't care. He loves that he gets mentioned every week, I think.
Because if I shared that about my husband, my husband would be like, you told them I downloaded the Marcia Brady book? That was between us, honey.
Well, my husband loves celebrity gossip, so. And he's proud of it.
The great thing is that with Audible, you can listen to it without anyone ever seeing the cover.
That's right.
So you're not sitting there reading it. You know, you're just listening. No one knows. It's a good thing. And I was very proud because last week, Scott Bourne, who's one of our other hosts for another show, finally broke down. I've been recommending the Spartans for months. Pretty much. And he finally broke down and listened to it on a road trip, an 18-hour road trip, which is about what you need to listen to it. So there's over 35,000 titles to choose from, of course. So people should get up there. And once again, you can get a free audiobook. If you've never done Audible, you can get a free Audible book at audiblepodcast.com/twim, and it also makes us look cool. So we would love to have you go up there and get your free book.
And another great holiday gift: give a subscription to somebody, or you know,
absolutely.
So let's set the stage a little bit. I want to share some statistics about use of podcasts and also about advertising and ad spending in podcasts. And then, you know, then we can kind of, I want to talk about things like, I asked the listeners actually, you know, via Twitter and Facebook and just in other places, you know, what they wanted to hear in particular. And, you know, so some of the things we'll talk about will be, you know, determining the value, dollar amounts, you know, how you measure the success of a podcast for an advertiser. Do they want engagement? Do they want downloads? I mean, audience info. I mean, things like that I think will be really helpful. But so just to set the stage, I brought some statistics. This is interesting. It's set, according to a survey by Pew Internet and American Life from August 2008, so this is one of the most recent surveys on podcasts, only 19% of internet users have downloaded a podcast to listen to or watch later, so that's including audio and video. That number is up from 12% 2 years ago, but that also includes both video and audio podcasts. Remember, those are being grouped together. So it's kind of interesting, and yeah, I was surprised. I thought it would have been higher, but I don't know. Maybe that's where it should be right now.
I think it's great news.
Okay, why do you think it's great news?
I think it's great news because it just shows that the market is still maturing. I mean, we're seeing what we've seen so far. We've seen it build up. I mean, 19% is a pretty big number when you talk about, you know, a general population. It took us, you know, well over a decade to get to 40-45% internet usage, you know, so or broadband usage. And so so the thing is that it is you know, we still have a long way to go. So when we see the success different people are having and the size of the industry already at only 19%, you know, we know that this is going to continue to increase. And it's great to know that we've gotten this far on that small of a percentage, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's a good point. And it'll be interesting to see how much more growth there is next year. I think we've already seen some examples of advertisers, and obviously our experts can speak to this in more detail, but sort of, you know, being more selective and choosing smaller venues to advertise in. And I don't mean smaller in a negative way, I mean in a positive way, just, you know, more targeted, nichier. Let me share just a couple statistics from the survey. I think there are now 43,000, this was as of the summer, I'm sure there are more, there are now 43,000 podcasts available, both audio and video, with more than 2 million episodes. That's according to Podcast Alley. And that's up from 26,000 podcasts and more than 1 million episodes in November 2006. Now, eMarketer forecasts some ad spending numbers. This will kind of get us into the why of advertising and podcasts, other than we just love them and do them, and we want you to support what we do. But eMarketer forecasts, this number is from a year ago, so granted, it's, you know, it's might be getting a little bit dated, but it was the most recent one that I could find. eMarketer said that spending on podcast advertising in the U.S. will grow nearly 10 times over the next 5 years. That in 2006, spending on podcast advertising reached $80 million, should grow to $240 million and $400 million, and those numbers over 2008 and 2011. So $240 million this year, $400 million in 2011. So that kind of sets the stage a little bit. And I guess I'm going to throw this to, you know, to Annette and Penny. Why advertise in a podcast? I mean, we're all kind of drinking the Kool-Aid already, and we want people to be, right? But we want to hear it from you guys. Like, when is it valuable and when is it not? I'm going to start with Annette.
Well, as Alex pointed out, online is evolving daily. And for our particular clients, it's a new media that they have not ventured into. So it's another audience for us, quite honestly. New users, new listeners, new buyers, be really the bottom line for us.
And so how do you compare when you're doing a media buy? Is a podcast usually part of an overall buy for a client, or there's certain clients that are only podcast advertisers? How does that work?
For our particular clients, it's part of the mix. We actually have separate budgets set aside for online versus radio or print or TV. So it's nice because I know exactly what I'm working with, and rather than having it mushed into the full mix.
Okay, so Penny, what's your reason?
I believe that the people that are on podcasts are really on the edge, and we're always looking for people that are really, really on the edge. Because for people to shop online, you're looking for a kind of a client that has no issues with this whole credit card online, you know, they live online. And someone who's listening to podcasts is really, really on that edge. And those are the clients that we're looking for, at least in podcasting, because, you know, they're very technologically savvy. And these are the people that, you know, for them to buy jewelry is not such a huge leap of faith online.
You know, I think that I totally agree with that. And I think that what's interesting about that is you're almost pre-sorting your clientele by going to podcasts, because people are exactly what Penny's talking about, are more inclined to not even want to talk to somebody. You know, I know that I had to change something on my AT&T account for my iPhone, and I was so annoyed that I had to call someone. You know, I was just like, really, I have to actually pick up the phone and call someone just to get something changed? I can't go to, you know, I can't go online. I can't just sort it out. And I think that there is a group, and when you're looking at that kind of rifle shot of spending just the money you need to get to a group that's like that, you know, I definitely agree that podcast really give people a great access to that.
Okay, so
can I add something to that, Dave?
Of course, go ahead.
A couple things. This is Suze. There's a relevancy to podcasting because a lot of it is much more vertical. Some people call it long tail. I think there's a lot of mid tail content. Some of my shows are very mid tail, and I think there's some relevancy to the listener. They get a bond to the hosts of the show. And when the hosts do host endorsements, just like Alex just did for Audible, they're more receptive to that messaging. So receptivity and relevancy, if you're talking in pure media or marketing terms, are the two things that I think podcasts have that a lot of other media just simply don't have.
Now, so what do you mean by relevancy? Do uh-huh. you just mean that it's a more targeted buy, that the product is more relevant to the audience, or because you're also talking about a connectedness?
Yeah, so relevancy would be that almost like contextual targeting, when you contextually target an ad. So if you have I have a new advertiser, Gong. He makes Gong meditation timers. And I run that in my Buddhist Geeks show, and I run that in Life Zero, John Flowers' show. Mm-hmm. So I have a number of shows where Purpose-Centered Life, Just for Women, they talk about meditation in their show. So that's the relevancy that I'm talking about. And that's what you'd get if you were running in magazines. Relevancy is really high in magazines as well, much more so than in typical broadcast content that you'd find, you know, on television.
Right, which is sort of the that's all about reach, just, you know, kind of getting the big bang and seeing what sticks.
It's right. About demographics on television more, I'd say, more than anything else, although I would defer to Annette because she, you know, she's the one who does this all day long.
Well, yeah, so how do you compare, Annette, when you're, I mean, because you're buying across all mediums. I mean, how do you compare?
Well, actually, contrary to what Suze was just saying, we do look at demographics because our clients, some target adults 35 plus, some targets adults 18 plus, men, women. So we have to look at the demographics. We have to look at household income. The reach is important to us. not necessarily for radio itself, but for a even for a podcast, because if we're not speaking to the right audience, it's not going to do us any good.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the mechanics of that. So how do you know? I mean, I'm not going to get the names right of what all of these different companies do, but obviously there's PodTrack, there's Wizard. I mean, there's all of these companies out there. There's Volo Media that are involved with measuring podcasts. But Annette, for your purposes, how do you know what you're getting? How do you break it down and figure out, okay, I want the demographics. I want to reach these people. I want to reach women.
I rely on people like Suze.
So is it the content producer that needs to supply that information to the advertiser?
Yeah, it's part of our media kit. So we use PodTrack. Some of the shows we represent also incrementally use a SurveyMonkey or what have you and drive their listeners there. So we like to have that aggregated and comparative data, indexed data through PodTrack that's demographic that we provide to Annette and to Penny and others. But we also like to have incremental questions that go beyond things like demographics and do you shop online and get more into the specifics of a show. And for that, we use custom surveys.
Okay, so Alex, what do we use?
We use PodTrack.
Okay, and so what do you know from PodTrack? Like what sort of, how do they break down, you know, audiences for TWIM or for This Week in Photography or so on?
I mean, the big thing is that we look at a general audience. Our podcasts generally are so niche that we don't really need a breakdown. You know, if they showed up at the show, you know, we have a pretty good idea of who they are.
That's the relevancy.
Because we're not we are very niche when we deal with the stuff that we're doing. What we're really looking at is what PodTrack really provides us that we like a lot is very, very accurate numbers. I mean, one of the things that advertisers kind of roll their eyes at is when people say, well, I've got 450,000, you know, downloads a week or whatever. You really got to make sure that those numbers are real. And PodTrack is, from our vantage point, or from what we've looked at and so on and so forth, is the most accurate that we've seen as far as numbers go. And so what we do is the numbers are very sobering. I mean, when we look at them, they're much smaller than what they were before. Before we were tracking, and they give you this little gray number that tells you this is what, you know, the kind of the total number of hits to the feed, but then it tells you this is what we think is actually, you know, the actual downloads, and a lot of times that can be a half or less of what the total number of hits are, and so we use PodTrack for that kind of information. We also, for some of our shows, we have a handful of shows that we run through Libsyn as well. And that one, you know, gives, you know, both of them give you a breakdown of what kind of what type of download apparatus they're using. Are they listening through iTunes or are they downloading through, you know, the variety of different ones? I mean, for us, I think given the style of our show and how we market the show, you know, anywhere from 93% to 95% of our downloads are through iTunes. And so we can see that. And then that tells us whether we should be focusing more on the way we distribute through iTunes, whether we should be, finding other avenues. And so far we've been really happy with that. But I think that it is key to have these numbers and have very clean numbers. And we can see not only what happened last week, but what's happened over the given show. You know, for instance, a show like we had This Week in Photography, the very first time the fourth episode, for instance, came out, and it had like 15,000, you know, 20,000 downloads. Well, now we can look back and say, well, that now it's been seen over 50,000 times, and it's a little very niche little show. But it didn't happen overnight. You know, it just people keep on coming back to some of these episodes, and that gives us a lot of information about what makes them work.
And so you can give that sort of historical data too, where, I mean, now once the show's been up and running for a while and the audience is established, you can say, you know, this episode at this time was viewed this many times, but now it's sort of like YouTube videos. I mean, something might be really hot for 2 weeks and get up to 1 million views, and then you check in 3 months later and it's at 2 million views. It got another million views, you know, in the next 3 months.
Well, where I think that there's also one of the things about it is that when you have to kind of start thinking about that and taking that into account when you're looking at advertising, that is like what we did with Audible in this episode and what we've done with, you know, Object Matrix and everyone else in the past episodes, is that we've embedded into the show. So they really are going to get a, you know, sure, they're only going to pay for whatever you agree to the first month or the week of or whatever that number, whatever that is. But there is is it this added value that just keeps on coming, because people do download a lot of these shows, especially when, you know, there's some people who just really want to listen to all of it and all of that information. And so they'll, like, they get into the show in episode 30 and they slowly catch up and they've listened to all of them, you know. So you're in the impact for an advertiser is much different. I think also when you look at these niche podcasts, in whatever niche they are, whether it's, knitting or media or whatever it is, I think that even though the numbers aren't the YouTube, a million downloads here, or 5 million downloads there, you're having a much tighter community, and one where the advertisement makes a lot more difference than, you know, YouTube, where someone kind of watched it passing by, you know. And I think that's kind of the distinction. Now, I think YouTube does have some shows that are building a solid audience. But I think that a lot of the things that we see hit a million or more downloads are kind of one hit wonders, you know, being in the right place at the right time or doing something really funny at that moment. But can you keep it going, and can you build a relationship with that audience? And that's something that I don't think you see as often in YouTube.
And just as a quick aside or tangent, there was an interesting article in the Financial Times in late November, projections from Screen Digest about how Hulu, I guess, was already or about to surpass YouTube in ad revenue, which is, you know, an ongoing thing we cover on This Week in Media, just the whole idea of, you know, the advertising environment. Penny, I want to hear from you a little bit from your perspective as a marketer. What kind of information do you want when Susan comes to you or when other podcasters come to you that's going to make it more attractive to you to back one of their shows? What data do you want to see?
We look for data like demographic. We look for interaction. When someone listens to a show, how much interaction? Is it the same group of people that are listening every week? Are you getting new people to listen to your new shows? You know, because once there's this interaction with the showman, so to speak, and the listener, then the trust happens unbelievable between those two people. And when that happens, then when the ad goes on, you're getting a much stronger effect in the process. And that's the power of the podcast, because there's a relationship between, let's say, Susan and her listeners. That creation, when she says, go to ice.com, get the jewelry, I met the owner and he's a great guy and I wear the jewelry all the time, he's given me as a gift. That is so powerful, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for relationship.
But how do you measure, when you talk about interaction, how do you measure interaction?
Comments on the blog. Are we seeing the same people listening, which is very important, because that's an interaction. A lot of the shows that I've advertised on there, you know, before the show or after the show, there are phone calls or played comments, which is very important to show that, you know, the listener is an active listener, not just someone who downloads it to his iPod and never listens.
Now, how important is that to you, Annette, sort of the talk back, if you will?
Do you measure
it too?
Absolutely. And the personal interaction is the credibility. And that's really what is done just remarkably well for our clients, so that we tested the recorded ad and it bombed, quite honestly. So when you have that personal interaction with the host, with the client, the listener is going to know that the host isn't going to be doing anything outrageous, and they're going to be talking about and representing a product that is good. So the credibility is huge for us.
So will you look at forum comments?
We don't personally. The client will, because everything will go back to their sites.
Susan?
I was just going to say something. One of the programs that I work with Annette on, we tested, I don't know, 10 or 12 shows, and then we narrowed it down to six shows that we think are really the best ones for this particular advertiser. And what was also interesting was that each of those hosts did their own live read host ad. Now, when we say live read, that's actually a misnomer. The host with talking points that Annette had supplied created their own commercial. unlike Alex or Leo, we don't let the host talk about products actually in the show. We record a separate time and then we use that as an insert in the show through our ad server, because we need to be able to have ads rotating in all those old archive shows that are fresh campaigns, not old campaigns. But the interesting thing about the campaign that Annette and I have been working on most recently is that of those five hosts, of those six hosts that recorded their own ads, those campaigns in general performed better than the ones where it was a standard ad that we recorded and ran. But what was really interesting was that there was one ad that was really cute in one of our shows, Just for Women. She did this ad with her boyfriend and it was fun and she laughed and it was really authentic. That ad way outperformed everything else. So even the host read ads, there's a range between them. And so creative still is really, really, really important when you're doing an ad to actually do a really nice job with it. Come up with some unique ideas as a host that set you apart, can take that campaign from a mediocre campaign to a real winner. And that's what we've been learning together.
So are we all pretty much of the mindset that for ads to really be effective in a podcast, they need to be host read, whether it's pre-recorded as you do, or whether it's baked into the show as we do here at TWIM? I mean,
I don't think so.
Okay.
We still do. Well, we still run a lot of campaigns that are really well produced ads that run across our network that perform. So it doesn't have to be host read. It can be really nicely done creative with a good VO and some nice music bed that has a nice call to action that's well done and perform well too. It doesn't all have to be that. And if the host is shilling every single product with a host read ad, then how many can you take? The advertiser can't afford to pay what it would cost to actually own all, you know, that host's mind share for their entire show. So you really have to run the balance of what you're offering.
And Annette, what's your feeling? Do you want to split it up? I mean, and also, do you feel like you're ceding a little bit of control when it is, you know, Sue's kind of making it her own, or as, you know, as we do here on TWIM, you know, Alex kind of talks about what he's reading that week, or I'll chime in and say, like, today, what my husband was reading. That wasn't in a script. Does that make advertisers trepidatious at all?
I don't think so. I think it, again, is more personal. You are talking about what happens in your life, and therefore, for our particular advertisers, they trust us. I trust Sue. Sue trusts you. So it's, you know, we all work together to make it a success.
Okay, so I want to make sure we talk a little bit about, give our audience some good takeaways. Like, how do you determine the value and the dollar amounts of your podcast for advertisers? Because I'm thinking about, you know, the listeners that I talk to, whether they're doing, you know, we've certainly had these questions when it comes to web video shows. We've talked about that a lot, and I think the answers probably apply to both. But that's the question I get the most when people email me is, if I'm just going to start pitching my podcast or my video show to advertisers, how do I determine how to price it? Suze, when you launch a new show, how do you make this decision?
I price everything, and this is how Annette and I work. This is how Penny and I work, too. Sometimes we do rev share, and sometimes we do CPM, and sometimes we do blended. And doing a rev share deal with a client means they have to be really good with their back-end infrastructure, or we won't touch a program like that. If they can't get their coupon codes working the first time, if they can't track things down to the penny, it is a complete waste of time and energy for us. So if we're going to do that at all, it has to be a decent price point, a decent rev share, and we have to get more than you'd get with an affiliate campaign for us to even look at that kind of thing.
Okay, so rev share, hold on. Explain what that means, in the world. Is it mean like you're directing somebody to go somewhere and use the service, so you measure actual
sales.
Okay.
And we get paid a percentage of the sale.
Okay.
Or a CPM basis where the client pays on a cost per 1,000 audio ads served. The range runs typically in the market from $15 to $50, depending on the length and the location and the amount of the spend and all of those kinds of things. And CPM works really well. A lot of times we'll also do a program that includes the CPM audio ads plus things like we'll post on the blog, we'll Twitter this information, we'll do a review of your product, whatever it might be. And then we're compensated in some way, typically a kind of a flat fee across a contract for doing the hourly work that goes along with the more computerized part of, you know, creating the ad and then serving the ad. And we also get paid to produce the ads too. So there are a lot of little components that often go to these kinds of contracts.
Okay, so Penny, what's your approach as a marketer, and what do you want to pay?
Well, what we like to do to begin with is test any new avenue that we're going to do. So if it's social media, as in Facebook, or podcasting, or blogging, whatever it is, we'll take whatever the person will throw at us, and we'll say, okay, you know, this is what you want. You believe in your product. We're ready to take the chance, but the budget is going to be very small once we get the data, because we're very detailed on our data gathering and the effect of our marketing. So if we see that the numbers are there, I don't mind paying whatever you want to call it, CPM, CPC, CPA, whatever the terminology in the marketing world is, as long as the numbers back into the same number where we make money and the advertiser's happy, then I can go on forever. So to begin with, we'll do a test, whatever they want to do a test on. But the test is going to be very small, and the numbers are going to be crunched, and we're going to be very transparent when we do that with our advertiser. And then, only then we move to the big leagues.
Okay, so Alex, I want to get your take on you know, sort of determining the value amount of podcasting and the different things that people have been talking about. What do you think works best? What works best for us, and what do you think works best in general for other types of for people who are doing other types of shows?
Well, I think that, you know, we've primarily what we've done is CPM, you know, so, you know, against the whatever shows we're doing. And I think that CPM when we started was in the vicinity of, I think, $25 or $30 CPM. And I think that now we operate typically in the kind of $50 to $70 CPM. Did we define CPM? I just want to make sure I didn't miss that.
Yeah, well, cost per thousand. But explain what that means.
Sure. If something has a cost per thousand, it means per 1,000 ads served. So a $50 CPM is a nickel per listen. That's how it works. And we just because the numbers are bigger, you get 100,000, 200,000. You just make the numbers smaller by making it cost per thousand instead of cost per listen. Right. That's so.
Okay.
That's
all right. Alex, go.
So the CPM is, typically we just look at how many people are listening, and this is what our audience, what we think is worth. I mean, we think that eventually, as this market matures, could grow to, you know, $70 to $100, even more, depending on how niche the market is and how effectively we're serving it. We're not there yet. I'm interested in doing rev share primarily because I've seen the reactions and I've heard, you know, anecdotally heard some of the reactions of people listening to our shows and how much they react to what we're talking about. And we've seen some of the reactions based on some of the video stuff that we've done. We've done some kind of linking from the actual podcast, both video and enhanced audio. And some of those have been pretty outrageous, the number of people who click through.
Are you able to share it all? Do you want to share?
Well, I mean, the thing, we've talked about this on past shows, but, you know, it was very early on in MacBreak, we started doing some tests in this area. And, you know, we were talking about microphones and recommending microphones. And this is the perfect example of why sometimes, you know, non-fictional content is so valuable is, you know, Leo and I are up there talking about microphones that we like to use. You know, we're not, you know, it's not like we're not being paid by someone to do it. We're just like recommending a bunch of microphones. And we talked about what we liked. And I started talking to people after that show came out, and they said, oh, yeah, I got this one. And I got Leo's, or I got yours, or I got the other one that you were mentioning. And suddenly I realized all these people that were, you know, my peers were buying based on the show. And so I called, you know, the way we had linked, you know, this was early on. This is, you know, a year and a half ago. The way we had linked to it is we just kind of Googled who was doing, you know, who sells this mic, and then we linked to them. And because we linked out of the QuickTime, there was no real bounce. You know, we were just trying to make sure, we were trying to test the system, like, will it crash kind of thing. And we called one of the resellers, and we said, you know, we linked to you, and we were wondering if you saw any bump in sales in this certain week, just out of curiosity. And he's like, oh, now this makes sense. he sells, you know, a handful of these mics every day, and suddenly he sold 2,000 in a week, you know, and he couldn't figure out what had happened, that he just got snowballed into it. And of course, after that, he's like, and whatever else you need, just let us know, we'll send it to you. We know that it's effective, and I think that you know, we'd like to get into those things. I think that a lot of times advertisers, when they do rev share, are going to make sure they need to think about what whether they're, you know, what that real number is going to be for them, and make sure that it works for them. Because on some more popular podcasts, they could end up writing a very large check, a check much larger than, you know, on an effective podcast, they might write a check much larger than a CPM deal, which is why we want to do it. It's lower risk for the advertiser in some ways, but it's a higher, higher return for us down the road if we do our job well. So, you know, but doing our job well, by the way, I think it's very important that we're doing, you know, I would rather, and you know, podcasting for us is something that we do because it's fun and because it's something we practice in, and it's a process, and we're figuring stuff out, and so I'm willing to, you know, I'd rather run shows without advertising. It's not as much a business in the same way like advertising for us. I'd rather run shows without advertising than run ads of advertisers that I, you know, that I don't believe in. And I think that for those kind of rev shares to work, it really has to be products that you really believe are good products.
I want to build on what Alex said. This is Susan again. My shows are my business. It is how I make my living. And I and a group of companies put together the Association for Downloadable Media. It's at downloadablemedia.org. And if anybody who's listening wants to get a sponsor or an advertiser, the Downloadable Media organization, we put together a sample media kit that people can just fill in the blanks. We put together an insertion order template, terms and conditions that are favorable for both the client and the podcaster. We also put together some standards for measuring your audience. So you can do it one of two ways. And if you do it one of those two ways, it's within the guidelines of fairness. So people like Annette and Penny know that they're comparing apples to apples. And last but not least, we put together an advertising units form that lists like 25 different ways you could potentially incorporate sponsorship or advertising into your show. And so those are all standardized units in our industry now. So buyers can go out and buy those things across lots of shows and scale their campaigns. And so I think there's a lot of resources out there that people might not be aware of. And I wanted to add
that
in.
No, I think that's great. And I was just thinking when you were saying that, if somebody is listening and they're thinking, okay, I'm ready to start selling ads in my podcast, what is the very first thing that they should do? In your case, would you direct them to?
I'd probably have them watch the video that I did. That's so bad. Of course. But it's really good. It's free. It's part of the Podcast Academy. And I did a presentation at the New Media Expo about how to get your show sponsored. And I tell you, what is a media kit? How does CPM work? What are the ad standards? How do you approach a buyer? When you pick up the phone to call them, what do you say? It's scary for people to call Annette and Penny. You know, they've got the power and the money, and it's scary. And so that's actually a really good thing. I get tons of positive comments on that. And it's just, you know, something that I did. And then go to the downloadablemedia.org site and get all that stuff and read it all. And so you're better, you know, better able to understand.
And Alex, what would you say? Where would you direct people?
One thing is I would look at getting... If you're not comfortable selling ads, if you haven't done it before, I mean, I don't like being in the same room with the, you know, be working out the deals for the advertising while we're working on content. It's just like it's kind of that old fashioned
church
separation.
And state, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Church and state. And so that's one of the reasons that I really, really like to work with a company like Podtrac, is because I just pass everything on to them. Even if someone contacts me directly, I just send it to Podtrac because I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with the contracts. I don't want to deal with the negotiation. I don't want to deal with any of that stuff. I just want it to be sorted out. Now, there's some people who are very comfortable with it. For instance, for This Week in Photography, Scott Bourne has been selling ads, you know, for over a decade, and he's very, very good at it, and he sets it all up well, and so there's no reason, you know, he just does his own ad sales, you know, that for our show, and he can do it directly because he's comfortable in that methodology. It's just not something that I want to spend my time working on, and so that's the, you know, for us, that's how we've kind of handled it. And there's other companies that do it, you know, Libsyn also, you know, does a lot of the ad sales, you know, pumping stuff in. I think that some companies have been you know, more effective than others. I think that one problem with the larger advertising groups is that it is harder for them to think about how to handle the smaller advertisers. And that's something we're looking in as we go into 2009, is, you know, it's easy for us to get someone like an iStock Photo or an audible.com, but what about individual plug-in manufacturers for MacBreak? You know, where we have more niche shows that we're creating for next year that may only have 10,000 or 15,000 downloads per show. And, you know, rather than, you know, MacBreak has already gotten to the point where it's a little too expensive for a lot of people to, you know, a lot of individual advertisers to advertise on. But we're going to have niche versions of that, which are more affordable, but it's a harder model for some of these ad selling agencies to wrap around. And so that's the thing that we are trying to grapple with right now.
So Annette and Penny, let's start with Annette. I'd like to get your take on that in terms of smaller shows that perhaps have smaller audiences. How do you measure it, and do you have a threshold that you need to have at least, you know, 5,000 listens or such and such downloads before you're interested? Go, I'll start with Annette.
No, not necessarily a threshold as to interest. Again, our clients are so niche that I rely on the Podtracks of the world or Susans of the world to let me know what they would recommend for the media. But to be perfectly honest, I am one of those agencies that I actually go through iTunes and I find the podcast that I think would be appropriate for our client. And a lot of them are through Podtrack, and we work with them as well. But I'm doing the.
So you'll do the searching yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
And what, like, you'll say, okay, if I have a client in this area, you'll know to go search under that category or topic or something like that.
Exactly. And that's where
good to know. I mean, that's interesting to know that the person representing the advertisers is actually out there, you know, checking it out and making sure, okay, I want to know what these podcasts are. I want to know what's popular. I want to know what's cropping up.
Yes. And
that's encouraging.
For our agency in particular, we're very, very, very customer service oriented. So, you know, and they are our livelihood, just as Susan's podcasts are her livelihood. So it only benefits us to be as hands-on as we possibly can.
So Penny, what's your take on sort of smaller shows that are just starting out? Are you willing to take a chance, or do you look for a show to be at a certain level? I mean, this is certainly something that, you know, they hear about a lot. You know, I mean, I do a lot of comparisons to the TV space just because, you know, I've been covering that for a long time. That, you know, there's certain cable networks that people don't even think about until they reach 40 million homes. Obviously, we're not talking at that level yet, but do you have any threshold at all?
Generally, I don't like to, you know, time is money, and based on our conversion rate and based on our experience with Susan's shows, we know where the threshold is, that our numbers make sense. So if I'm going to have one of my people put the time in to track it, to give the copy, we would like to have that the copy should speak to the readers. It shouldn't be just standard copy, because then, you know, you're not talking their language. So everything takes time. So you need, you know, based on our numbers, we know that there has to be a certain threshold that it makes sense for us to take the time to get involved. And, you know, smaller shows that do contact us, we were like, you know, build up your readership, but we have the best listeners, they're your customer. We know that, but time is important to us as well.
Can I brag about Penny for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
This is Suze again. One of the things Penny just did, so he likes the digital divas. That's what his team is always out looking for, those women who spend a lot online, because they'll buy for themselves and for their friends, right? So they're really good. And what Penny just did was gave two really beautiful pink sapphire tennis bracelets to the two of the women who are part of our the Diva Cast, which is one of the kind of venerable women's podcasts. We represent them, and they wore them on a cruise. Suzanne Maiden and Carrie Reynolds, the divas wore them on a cruise and showed everybody their ice.com product, and then made sure that they talked about the brand on their show as well. So they went on a cruise with a bunch of other women and listeners of their show and all this stuff, and Ice gave them these bracelets, and then they give them away on the show.
Oh,
so it was
cool.
One of those kind of
bracelets that they've worn.
They got to give them away, and they're, you know, to support breast cancer because they're pink sapphires. So they were philanthropic. They were used in the real world. They were given away to people who called in and talked about why they wanted to win the bracelet. And the divas decide who gets them based on those call-ins. So everybody's talking about ice.com, right? It's
go.
A really
That's
nice
smart.
Kind
That's
of 360
campaign.
Program. And
like
Penny
that.
Will go for stuff like that. That's what's great about ice.com. And it's finding those brands that the podcasters can play with. That is, I think, where we're going to get the energy in this medium.
Now, I know we need to, I'm going to need to let Penny and Alex go in just a minute or two because we have a couple hard stops. So actually, we'll probably wrap up the show very soon. But that sort of leads into another thing that I think is important to talk about, which is finding the right mix. I mean, I've been thinking recently about my show, The New Medium, and while that's a video production, you know, I've been talking to folks next year and my advertisers, Digital Smiths, about whether I want to have, I mean, Susan and I have these conversations and I've talked to other people, do I want to have more than one? What is the right amount in a show? If you have a 60-minute podcast, Alex, how many ads should there be in it?
Well, I mean, radio is, you know, 20 minutes of advertising, I think, for a 60-minute area. You know, to put things in perspective, I have to admit that one ad every 30 minutes is about the maximum that I want to listen to as a listener. And that's a maximum. I'm much more comfortable with most of our shows having one advertiser. And I don't think that it has to be that way. I don't think that's a hard, fast rule. I think that if you can do it effectively and it's part of the show and so on and so forth, I think that you can maybe get more in there. But I know that, you know, two or three is to me, it feels chaotic, you know, and so, you know, in a 60-minute show. And so I know we do two pretty often in Mac Break weekly. That's not uncommon. We've done three, I think, a handful of shows, and I just felt like it was too many to me. So, but I think that, you know, we didn't get a lot of complaints from listeners. And so it's a long show, too. It's an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes podcast. So there's a lot of space there to throw it into.
I'm going to cut you off for one sec so we can say goodbye to Penny because he needs to go. Penny, thank you for being on the show. Where can people find you? I guess we've said it a lot of times. Ice.com, right?
Penny at ice, PINNY at ice.com. If they have any questions, I would like to thank Susan, who's a real doll, who has walked us. She's held our hand through this whole process, and we're believers because of her. So God bless her.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, Matzo Man.
Okay, bye.
And I think that's a great, you know, it's a good point that Penny brought up is, and Alex, I would love to get your take on this as well, but I think when you are the host or the creator or the CEO or whatever it is, you know, you really need to be hands-on and be involved to some degree. Now, in your case, you farm that out to Podtrac because that's what makes sense for you. You know, and obviously Susan's case, it makes a lot of sense for her to work very closely with some of her advertisers. So, and Alex, I know I kind of cut you off, so I don't know if you want to pick up where you left off or...
That's all I really had to say. I think that, you know, I know for shorter shows, it's really one advertisement. Like if you're less than 10 minutes long, I really don't even consider having more than one ad. You know, for Mac Break, you know, we have an ad usually pre-roll, post-roll. I think if we got into having lower thirds, we might be able to put another two or three advertisers in there if it wasn't stopping the show. But we wouldn't consider, you know, in less than a half an hour, at this point in the industry's maturity, we would never consider putting in more than one.
So final question for Annette. What do you think is the right mix when you're buying ads? How many other advertisers do you want to be next to?
None. I want to be the only one. in our experience through the podcast, and especially through Podtrac, who we associated with before Susan, they would do a 15-second and then a 30-second. And the first ad is about 15 or 20 seconds into the show. And then the 30-second comes about halfway through. But we have found that the post-rolls do nothing for us. So we stop those. And it's really, you need the listener's attention immediately. And so we get the pre-roll and no further than halfway through the show would it make sense for another ad to run.
And you bring up a good point. I think it's worth just reiterating that the research is so critical. I mean, as it is with any advertising medium, but you know that you have to be committed to getting the statistics, whether it's through a podcast or through a Podtrac or Volo Media or whoever it is, or you know, doing the additional surveys. You use SurveyMonkey for that, Suze, to get additional information about your listeners, and really understanding how they're using it, where they're listening to it, who they are, because that that's what you're buying, Annette. I mean, that's ultimately what you're buying, and you need to know that. You can't just say, you know, I'm doing a show on this, and because it's in the right audience, you know, you should buy it.
Right.
I mean, you've got to take it seriously. If you want people to advertise and spend money, I'm sorry if this sounds obvious, but it's like you have to make sure that you're treating your show and your podcast like a business. I mean, when I first started the New Media Minute and it got to the point where I was ready to start selling ads, it was like I had to look at, okay, am I producing it on a regular schedule? Am I providing valuable content each week? Is it produced at the highest level possible? You know, what more does this need? Because if it's just, I mean, sure, some people can, you know, going back to the YouTube example, can make a video in their garage and, you know, you get lucky and you know, maybe you do make a little bit of money on YouTube, but we're all talking about doing this on a regular basis. You have to be willing to commit to doing the research, to be set up properly, to approach an advertiser, and to be armed with the right information about your show and your project before you approach them.
Absolutely.
Hey, yeah, I have to bug out.
Okay, so we'll say goodbye to Alex. Alex, thank you. Happy holidays.
Bye, Alex.
And you can find Alex on Twitter at Alex Lindsay.
Or hot tubbing with the monkeys.
Yes. Yes. We were going to get into the hot tub with the monkeys, and then we watched one monkey just savagely attack the other monkey in the hot tub, and we thought, maybe that's not such a good idea.
I think they might poo-poo in there, too.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, thanks so much, and I'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Suze, where can people find you online?
One last thing I want to tell people. Can I do it?
Yeah, go do it.
So there's this really good piece of research. Whether you're buying or selling, it's a really interesting piece of research. It's done by Universal McCann, one of the largest international advertising agencies in the world. And they did a piece of global research. They did it in markets all over the world called Next Thing Now. They wanted to understand what the behaviors were of what they call the super influencers, the most influential people on the internet. Who were they? And what were their behavioral online habits? In the hopes that they could actually find them then later, identify them and find them and then market to them, because the super influencers are the ones, of course, that not only consume products, but tell everyone else about that experience. And they're the perfect, you know, kind of pass along people. And what they found is that the super influencers index very highly against all active internet users, when they're doing the following things: uploading video clips, subscribing to an RSS feed, starting their own blog, downloading a podcast, or uploading photos to photo sharing sites. So it strikes me that in that top five category, you can market to people who are bloggers. You love that. That's what we do from a PR perspective. People who are listening to podcasts are super influencers. So not only are the hosts influential in moving product,
the audience is too.
The audience is influential. And that's something that, although we can't measure that very easily, it's something that should kick up the value of the media that's being purchased in the podosphere.
And it goes back to the whole idea that there's less waste. You're reaching the right people.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, Suze?
Well, I have my own show called Dishy Mix. It's all about media marketing, advertising, and Web 2.0. And I had my best month ever. Yay. With my numbers in November. So the market just keeps growing and growing. That consistency that you were talking about, that's the thing. You just have to stay in it. So Dishy Mix, of course, is my show. And then Personal Life Media is our network of shows. And I'm one of the shows on it. So you can find me everywhere from, you know, just Susan Bratton.
Yeah, you're easy to find.
I got no handles.
Online. Exactly. And Annette, where can people find you?
Well, my email address is Annette@BautistaDM.com, and our agency is Bautista Direct Marketing.
Oh, you're going to get hit up.
Oh, my God.
You're going to get hit up after this show.
You're brave.
You are a daring woman. And I think everyone knows how to reach me, DaisyWhitney@gmail.com. There's so many other things that we could talk about and we could discuss. So if people have more questions or specific questions they want asked, you know, feel free to write to me. I probably won't have the answer, but I will know how to find it. So you are welcome to get in touch with me. Read my stories on TVWeek.com. Follow me on Twitter. There you go. All right. We're over and out.